the sky. And what I will try to convey in this talk is that we can get some information about what was the past stellar life on, from the planetary nebula shells, but we cannot get a lot of information. Basically, because nature, in general, doesn't have a tendency to behave in such a nice way. This is Abel 39, a beautiful planetary nebula, round. If we assume a constant AGB wind evolving through the AGB phase, we will have an R to the minus 2 density profile. When the whole envelope is ejected, we change the mode of the wind mechanism. We go into radiation-driven winds, and we basically create a shock structure. We have the radiation field, the PDR, and the shock structure are at the same place, and we can explain it very easily. The problem is nature has a tendency to behave in very complicated ways. And this is a planetary nebula you are probably very familiar with, because this is the Hubble observation, and when we take very deep exposure, this is what we find. This is basically the AGB shell. What we think is most of the AGB shell is subject to instabilities, it has suffered some kind of processes in the meantime, and when we look at the inner shell, the brightest shell, the one that is usually observed, we see that it has basically very complicated structures. In blue here is the X-ray emission, so we have an adiabatic shock internally there. And we can even complicate more the picture and have collimation, very strong collimation in planetary nebula. Up to 25-30% of planetary nebula are highly collimated. We don't need highly collimation mechanisms to explain other kinds of objects, only when we are dealing with these kind of things. But if we try to connect everything from the point of view of stellar evolution, we need to explain the formation of planetary nebula of this type connected to the evolution of the AGB star. So what we have ingredients. We know that the star needs to evolve, and it needs to evolve from the red giant branch phase, basically. It needs to go all the way up the AGB, go through the thermal pulses, go through the constant. You are familiar with the HR diagram. We have a mode of changing the wind. We go from a dense, slow-velocity wind that is changing constantly on the surface of the star to a very fast wind with low density. We have progenitors that range from 1 to 8. We don't have single planetary nebula progenitors. We have a whole range of masses. And we have stellar dynamics. We heard a lot about yesterday, the formation of bow shocks. And we have collimation mechanisms. So what we have tried to do over the last few years is trying to put all these things together and see what we can learn from the point of view of the star. Mass loss, I mean, we can't stop saying how important it is. Lynn made a very good point yesterday that we need the time-dependent evolution of the mass loss of the wind. What is the problem here? The problem here is that the stellar evolutionary models need mass loss recipes in order to evolve a star, because the stellar evolution itself is highly dependent on the mass loss is happening in the surface. But we cannot compute stellar evolution and mass loss at the same time in this type of objects. So, why? Because we have shock waves, winds, radiation transfer. Sophie gave a very good talk about what is going on with the wind in this kind of objects. The consequence of that is that the stellar evolutionary models have to rely on some empirical mass loss parameterizations. Basically, you assume something that is related to something. It can be the fundamental mode of pulsation from the star, a luminosity relation, some parameterization of these models, and you get a mass loss rate dependency with time. The initial to final mass relation is fixed. And in general, the maximum mass loss rate at the star can achieve on the AGB phase. So you can easily see that since this is fixed and this is fixed, the time scale of evolution is fixed as well, according to stellar evolution. Only changes if we change this parameterization. What is the implication on the shells? What we did is try to put the predictions of the stellar evolutionary models. This is wind on the AGB phase versus time. And we have it here for different initial masses. So this is how the wind changes from the point of view of the star according to time as the star evolves up the asymptotic giant branch phase. We We see that, for example, one solar mass star suffers strong modulations of the wind parameters, while a higher mass star differs in the maximum mass loss rate achieved and on the time scale of evolution. The wind velocity changes with the thermal pulses as well, and this is based on the Basiliades and Wood models. We put this as input in our grid, in our hydro code. This is our input, and see what happens, because we can then tell what we get. This is the density structure and velocity structure at different times on the evolution of a one solar mass star that we get out of the models. You see that the density profiles change a lot depending when in the evolution we are looking at the star. We have completely different density profiles. And one very important thing that came out of these simulations is that we get stars that are very big, out of the order of larger than 1 parsec, up to 2 parsecs shells. And those are simply the consequence of putting the evolution of the star into a hydro code, according to some parameterization of the stellar wind that has been fully tested. So we have predictions. AGB shells should be big if we want to account for the whole mass loss that was lost by the star. Another important thing is that the signatures of the mass loss modulations are not recorded in the density or in the velocity structure of these shells, because we have a very complicated dynamics in the gas. And in fact, the densest shells are created between two density enhancements. Sometimes the mass loss is catching up with previous mass loss, or we have two density structures that pile up material, things like that. This is just to show how the evolution is. In the simulation, we have the star is in the center of the grid. This is just a spherically symmetric model. And here we have that this will turn on every time the mass loss from the star increases in the center, but shells are moving out. We have different shells being created, being deleted in the interstellar medium. At some point, the planetary nebula wind will turn on, ionization will turn on and so forth. So this is what we get if we just put the predictions of stellar evolution into a hydro code. But this is a simplified version, of course, because we know that there are more processes. We know that the stars move in the gravitational field of their galaxy. Sorry. And they move with different velocity depending on the population they belong to. So we expect that stars in the halo will have random orbits in 3D with high velocities. But the stars that are in the disk will have lower velocities moving through a denser interstellar medium. So we try to put this into the simulations as well. See what are the different populations we can get and what is the different shares we predict from the models. This is just to show that we change the density of the interstellar medium according to the population that we use. If we are modeling a high velocity star, we cannot put a high density interstellar medium because it doesn't make sense. And we also change the temperature. This is what we get. Oops, I wanted the previous one. This is what we get when we evolve a one solar mass star. It's moving. With two different densities of the interstellar medium and at the same velocity of the interaction. Now the star is moving through the interstellar medium while losing mass. We see we create both shocks. The wind input is exactly the same in both simulations. Exactly the same. We are just changing between this and this the external density of the interstellar medium. And we see that the final structures are completely different. In fact, because this star is moving through a higher density interstellar medium, has a higher Mach number because here we lower the temperature. It's a more supersonic interaction. This is a high velocity interaction. I mean, basically, we know what is the process. As the star evolves, the mass is being left behind. Now we have the development of very strong instabilities. They are different depending on the density we are using for the interstellar medium, because we can be in the radiative or semi-radiative case. We have cooling in the simulations. So we see Again, the input is exactly the same. We are changing the density of the interstellar medium. So high velocity interactions in general result in broken shells where the interstellar medium can penetrate inside the structure. And this is AGB stars. Now what we do is turn on the fast wind inside, we create an adiabatic shock, and we form the inner structure of the planetary nebula. This is a subata of some of the structures that we can find in these models, and this is only for a one solar mass star. I haven't shown any models for higher mass stars. Time, same time in this axis, time changes in this axis. We change the velocity, the relative velocity of the star with interstellar medium. This is 10, this is 30, this is 50, and this is 100. We can get everything with the same input. And this is just three snapshots. We have thousands of snapshots because evolution is 10 to the 6 years during the AGB phase. This is from the outside. Let's look at the inside. Collimation. What can we do with collimation? Let's put it in a very simple way because I have very little time. In general, in planetary nebula, we have two perspectives. We need to create bipolar morphologies. We can make it through a single stellar evolution and through binary evolution. Binary evolution is easy in order to collimate objects. You just create an enhancement in the density. When the fast wind comes, you have collimation. It's more difficult when you have a single star, because you need high velocity rotations and a magnetic field. There has been some models that have done this kind of simulations, but they're just put ad hoc, they are not linked to the star. What we try to do is to link these mechanisms to the star, and to that we have to do stellar evolution. We realized that there was not a single model of stellar evolution with rotation for these low mass stars, and by low I mean 1 to 8. So we put stars of a mass of 3.5 to 5 to rotate. We put them with rotation velocities typical of the main sequence, 250 kilometers per second, and we check whether at the end of the thermal pulse in AGB phase we have the required velocities at the surface to launch the wind mechanism that can collimate through magnetic fields. The result is that no. I mean, it doesn't matter how we do the stellar evolution. It doesn't matter how, I mean, and we in fact, we did some game playing with the stellar evolutionary models, and we didn't allow the momentum of the core to be transferred to the envelope until the end of the evolution, for example, knowing that this wasn't realistic, but just to see if we were able to make it. And no, I mean, single stars cannot provide the rotational velocities at the surface required to launch the Biermann and Cassinelli wind disk mechanism for these stars. So single stars don't have the necessary rotational velocities at the surface at the end of the AGB. How can we inject angular momentum in the stellar surface? With something else. We check. We are doing models. We are checking different processes. We can do it maybe with low mass objects, substellar objects, red dwarf planets. This is the evolution of the stellar radius, and this is here we just put planets at the initial distances from the star and check where they are, when they are engulfed in the stellar surface. Because the injection of a planet can provide the angular momentum necessary in the surface. Not the injection of a planet can provide the necessary angular momentum. Some planets at the right time could provide the necessary angular momentum in the surface of the star to launch these mechanisms of collimation. So we are doing different simulations trying to see where we can get the angular momentum in the surface. So to summarize, if we put stellar evolutionary models into hydrogrids, we get shells that are up to 2.5 parsecs around AGB stars. Assuming that the star is not moving with respect to the interstellar medium, if we put any kind of relative velocity, the first consequence is that we will not, I mean, the shell that we see around the star is not necessarily what the star was losing from the beginning, because most of the material is being left behind as the star is moving. This is one of the things. The shares will be smaller. We have that the ISM interaction provides with cometary tails and all kinds of structures. And here we have another typical planetary nebula that we can see, I mean, here in this image, no, but they are often surrounded by these halos, very low density emission halos that are the result of the AGB evolution in principle. We can reduce the mass of the envelope through run pressure stripping, and in general, it's hard to see the contribution of the mass loss for the AGB star onto the planetary nebula phase. And in fact, it's hard even to see it on the AGB phase. We only see things that are dense and close to the star. Most of the mass loss process is somewhere in the interstellar medium. And as the last thing, single stars, we think that single stars cannot make highly collimated planetary nebula.
Again, very perfect timing. It's going very well. Any questions? Yeah.
Yes, on the sun, we know that the solar wind is asymmetric, okay? Although the sun has no companion. Do we know why?
Magnetic field.
Magnetic fields, okay.
Jörg, there's a microphone at your desk.
So do these collimated planetary nebulae have binary companions? Is there a correlation between binary companions and collimation of planetary nebulae?
We have been looking for binary companions for 50 years, and until 4 years ago, there were 5 objects known with binary companions. The problem is that their radial velocity searches for this type of objects are very difficult, because the star doesn't have many few lines, and you have on top the emission of the nebula. Recently, there have been more found, but what happens is that there is no one-to-one correlation between the ones that you see highly collimated and the presence of a binary. Often binaries are found in the planetary nebula that you really don't need a binary to explain. And another important question is that you don't only need a binary, you need a closed binary, because if you have a long period binary, it's not going to make any difference for the collimation process.
Okay, time for another question. Yeah.
Hello. Were there any special conditions for the planet to provide angular momentum in order to create collimation?
Yes, the mass and the orbital distance.
Okay. So you need like very massive planets, like Jupiter-like planets.
You need more massive than, I mean, almost to the brown dwarf limit.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
All right. Can the next speaker come up already? And in the meantime, we can see if there's any more questions. If not, then let's thank. Yeah,